Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's NXT and AEW report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will cover both AEW and NXT show, as well as bring you all the latest news in the world of professional wrestling. And that's what we're going to start with. 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room and we could take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, there's quite a bit of news in the world of professional wrestling, and let's start with the fact that Eric Bischoff has been released from the WWE. He is no longer involved with SmackDown. Eric Bischoff tweeting that Bruce Pritchard, who will be taking his spot, is a good friend and a great producer, and he wishes him well and all the normal stuff that you would say. But what does this really tell you about the WWE and SmackDown on Fox? Well, it tells you a few things. First off, I haven't ran into anyone who has any inside information that has ever said that Eric Bischoff did much of anything in regards to SmackDown. He did make a couple of hirings, I think, of writers, and he did act as a liaison somewhat between Fox representatives and WWE representatives. But as far as actually having his fingers in the pie and doing anything creatively or anything to alter the show in any way, I heard nothing about that. And my assumption is that Eric Bischoff never was going to do that. And my assumption is that Eric Bischoff was hired for the specific purpose of being that liaison. And once that was done, they figured that they had used up Bischoff's name value. I truly believe that now, the WWE. I think it was done because they said, well, we're going to bring in Paul Heyman and we'll bring in Eric Bischoff and it will look like, wow, we're getting all the top guys from former brands and it's going to be fresh and new and exciting. And that led to absolutely nothing. It hasn't led to anything on Raw, where if that's Paul Heyman's best, Paul Heyman has lost his touch. And I don't for 1 minute believe that's Paul Heyman's best. And Eric Bischoff did nothing and now releases the reins to a producer, Bruce Pritchard, who is, no matter what anyone says, a yes man for Vince McMahon. And that's all he is. Bruce Pritchard keeps his job by saying, we're going to do this. Vince doesn't want you to do that. Never mind, we're not doing it. We'll do what Vince wants. That's how Bruce Pritchard keeps his job. So SmackDown will now be Vince McMahon's baby. Not that Raw isn't. I don't believe for a minute that Raw isn't, based on what I'm seeing. But to hire and fire Eric Bischoff that quickly, truthfully makes me think that they had never really come to terms with what they were going to do. I think Bischoff was a hired gun for some name value and a little bit of maybe back and forth between the Fox representatives to show good faith or whatever it happened to be. And, of course, there's the possibility that he was the scapegoat, and when the ratings start falling, they say, oh, well, you're with Bischoff. It's Bischoff's fault, even though he did nothing. Either way, Eric Bischoff gone, Bruce Pritchard in. Also gone from the WWE reportedly is Alicia Fox, who spent the better part of, I think, about 14 or 15 years there. Now, she's definitely had her trouble, from getting into it with fans outside the arena to getting into it with Ronda Rousey's husband to substance abuse problems and everything else under the sun you can possibly think of. The last time I remember we saw her was during that Legends reunion thing. She was in the back. And her page is now completely off the WWE.com site, and she has been moved to the alumni, which would indicate to me that Alicia Fox has been released. Now, we live in an age where as soon as someone is released from the WWE, we automatically say, oh, well, they're going to AEW. I have no information that AEW would be interested in Alicia Fox. She has a lot of problems. Also, there was rumors that Bischoff is going to be signed with AEW. That would be a huge mistake. Because if AEW is preaching that they want a backstage that's free and clear of politics and free and clear of corporate underdealings, and they want the wrestlers to sort of be in charge and everything, Eric Bischoff would be the exact opposite of all of that. Eric Bischoff is not a popular man with talent. He's not a people person. He's not someone who the tremendous amount of the wrestlers actually respect. And to throw him in there and say he's in charge would kind of be doing the exact opposite of what you've been preaching since you announced you were going to have this federation. So I'd be very surprised if Eric Bischoff showed up there. Very surprised. I'd also be surprised if Alicia Fox showed up there. Her name recognition isn't that great. Her wrestling is solid. When she was in the ring, I thought her wrestling was very good. But I don't think at this point signing Alicia Fox would be, you know, any kind of an earth-shattering announcement that AEW would say, we can't pass up on this opportunity. And the third piece of news, of course, is that AEW superstar Luchasaurus is injured. We found that out on Wednesday. Didn't compete in the tag team tournament. No real word on the severity or when he's going to be back, but he is injured. And, you know, you're going to get this. You're going to get this with the AEW guys, especially, you know, given the fact that there's now a TV schedule and they're going outside and they're doing X, Y, and Z in between the TV schedules. And it's like I said, when you're holding a pay-per-view a month or every 3 months, it's very different when you have a television show. Style of wrestling does count. Paul Heyman found that out. I mean, when Paul Heyman was doing, you know, four-walling shows here and there a couple times a week, and using his people sparingly, well, I won't use you this week, you use you, you know. He was flying all right, wasn't he? There were still injuries, but he could overcome them. On TV, this was a different thing. And you had to keep people healthy who were in major storylines, and you couldn't really, you know, overuse people. It's the difference between a 7-game playoff series and the season in baseball, you know what I mean? And I think AEW is finding that out. John Moxley no longer involved with New Japan. There's going to be more rules coming because they want this show to be successful, obviously. And they're going to have to understand that in doing so, there are things you can and cannot do. If you have a month or two and a half between shows, there's a lot more you can do than if you have 7 days. So basically, that's all the news, Mike. I'm kind of surprised to hear that Bischoff was let go so quickly. And I'm also kind of surprised that they finally pulled the trigger on Alicia Fox. It seemed like she was, you know, someone who could do no wrong there. No matter what she did, they tended to just shrug it off and keep her. But it looks like they set them to an end.
Right. And it figured that because You look at it, the two people that she's tied to, one of them's in Europe right now, and the other one, in Cedric Alexander, is moving on with his career, and she's back basically in his past. And you're right, the place that she might end up, if they actually think about it, probably would be Impact, but I don't see that either because of her problems out of the ring. I think basically her career is basically over.
Yeah, sadly it could be. I mean, I could see her doing some indie shows and showing up here and there and doing some things, but to get back into a major federation and be a major player in a major federation probably isn't going to happen for Alicia Fox. It's a shame because I'll tell you, had she been able to manage her demons and her issues, she had the physical talent and she had the mic skill to really pull off an interesting character. She wasn't like a lot of the other WWE women's competitors. she could set herself apart. She had the ability to kind of set herself apart. And it's a shame. It's just a shame that it didn't work out. As far as the Bischoff thing, Todd, I had a feeling, you know, I just had a feeling this wasn't going to work out when I kept hearing that Bischoff is really not doing anything. He's not really behind any of the creative decisions of SmackDown. I started to get the feeling that Eric Bischoff was a very short-term employee.
Oh, you're absolutely right there about Bischoff and everything. Like you said, I got that. I've been thinking about that for a while too, about Bischoff not being there, and like you said, I kind of knew it was going to come sooner or later to be released, be fired from the WWE, not this early.
Yeah, it was pretty quick, wasn't it? Look, I think we all know the situation with the WWE, and that is that Vince McMahon, at his age, is not going to change his spots. Vince McMahon is a micromanager. This is a man, here's what you have to understand about Vince McMahon. This is a man who is a multi-million, has the XFL to keep him occupied, everything else in the world, and he's still the type of guy who wants to sit backstage and whisper to his announcers what he wants them to say. That's how micromanaging Vince McMahon is. So for Vince McMahon to simply say, look, I'm turning over the reins and, you know, I'm just going to kind of dance away from this a little. Yes, I'll be in the business aspect of it. I'll have my say. But as far as the creative aspect and what goes on in front of the cameras, I'm turning that over to other people. It's not going to happen. He can say it's going to happen. It might happen for 2 weeks, and then he's going to be right back at it because that's just the nature of the beast. He's not going to relinquish this until he has no other choice. So what you're going to see, for the greater part, you might get some Heyman stuff in there once in a while or whatever, but for the greater part, you're seeing Vince McMahon's vision, and that's just exactly what it's going to be. Now, I did get a couple of people write me, ask me if I would mention that Roman Reigns had tweeted something or mentioned something that he also thought the ending to the Hell in a Cell match was a huge mistake. But he was very upset with the fans because he said, you know, Bray Wyatt risked his health taking shot after shot like that. Seth Rollins obviously let it all go in the ring. Both guys did exactly what they were told. And to boo them, he felt was anger misplaced. But here's what Roman Reigns has to understand. Who do we boo? Vince McMahon's not out there. The writers aren't out there. You boo what happens. Okay? You boo what happens. I don't think anybody was booing the effort that was put on by Seth Rollins. I don't think anybody was booing the effort that was put on by Bray Wyatt. What people were booing is what they saw the writing on the wall. They began to figure out how this match is going to go. And then they said to themselves, this is exactly the wrong move. This match should not go this way. And so they began to boo. It appeared they were booing Seth Rollins because what they were saying is, we don't want Seth Rollins to appear as though he is so far above the Fiend that he can beat this man who in most aspects of what you showed about him was almost impervious to pain and unbeatable. So badly that the referee is going to have to stop the match. Let's just juxtapose these two things. Let's just say this was the Undertaker in his prime against Seth Rollins, and the Undertaker had beaten Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania in his first big feud, and now he was going up against Seth Rollins, who happens to be there at that time period. And Seth Rollins beat the Undertaker so badly that he couldn't pop back up. And the referee had to stop the match. But then the Undertaker did pop up and beat up Seth Rollins, but it wasn't until after the referee said the Undertaker's health is at risk, we have to stop it. Do you honestly think the momentum for the Undertaker would have been the same? Of course not, and you never would have done it. Because what you wanted to stress with the Undertaker is, it's going to take a ridiculous effort to keep this man down. It's not a normal competitor you're attempting to keep down. That's what the fans wanted of Bray Wyatt's Fiend. And that's why the fans booed Roman. They did not boo the effort of Seth Rollins. I didn't hear one person write to me or call this show or talk to me and say, you know, Seth Rollins didn't put on a very good match. I thought he was lame. Or Bray Wyatt was kind of, you know, mailing it in. I didn't hear anybody say that. Everybody knew they gave a good effort. They just didn't like the story. And I don't know what you want us to boo. If we're unhappy, we should do what then? If we're unhappy with the way the story's going, we're just supposed to sit there? That doesn't make any sense. Sometimes the boos are not directed at the people in the ring. And that's what you have to understand. Roman should understand it better than anyone else. Because he was a victim of that. Every time Roman sucks chants were hitting and all kinds of things, you had to understand that the vast majority of those people didn't think that Roman Reigns was really an awful wrestler. They thought the way he was being booked was awful. They thought the way he was being utilized was awful. So for Roman Reigns, having gone through all of this, to not have figured that out yet, Mike, makes me scratch my head a little bit.
Yeah, and we all should scratch our head, and that's the thing. Now, you're right about Roman Reigns. He, more than most, should understand what's going on here. You know, he, more than most, should understand that they're not booing the situation. I mean, the only way that the fans can make it more, and I don't know if they've done it, has done it yet or whatever, more apparent is by chanting, "The booking sucks." You know, that's the, maybe then the WWE would get the message, but I doubt it.
No, I doubt it too. You know, again, it's easy for them to pass off this on the wrestlers. It's not the wrestlers that are, you know, that are doing this. Anyway, AEW versus NXT week 3. We got Keith Lee and Dijakovic part 5, or I don't know how many parts. We've got the beginning of the tag team tournament there over in AEW. We also have Chris Jericho against Darby Allin. And we have a very interesting match with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page versus Jon Moxley and Pac. Now, on the surface, AEW honestly should have this by a landslide. Because what we got in NXT was a little bit less than what they advertised. Let's face it. Tommaso Ciampa coming out there, he had a decent match, but you know, it was just sort of a warm-up, just a welcome back sort of a match. Nothing special. Likewise, you know, we got to see a few matches like that, didn't we? We got to see a few sort of build-up sort of matches on NXT. And then we finish with what? Pete Dunne, Damian Priest. I'm not 100% sold on Damian Priest, and I he's good. He's a good wrestler. I'm not sold enough to have him go over Pete Dunne, who, in my opinion, is not only probably the best wrestler you have in any of the NXT divisions, but probably the second best wrestler you have in your company. I would say AJ Styles, and then it's very, very hard for me to pick anybody else except Pete Dunne. And that's saying something. The sad fact is Pete Dunne is probably just a little bit too small to hit main roster and be huge. Otherwise, he has every single tool that you would need to be a huge star. But in NXT, that's okay. So you got to be careful about how many matches he's dropping and how he's dropping and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not sure we're looking at Damian Priest, who's certainly a quality talent, but he could also be a flash in the pan type talent. I don't think Pete Dunne is. Now, some people are saying, well, that's the right move. It gives Priest credibility. Yeah, it does. Just be very careful that you don't have Pete Dunne lose his credibility. Because after that first UK tournament, he had nothing but. The momentum he had was outrageous. And you don't want to stall that momentum. Not when a lot of people still haven't seen him. See, that's the thing. We're not saying, oh, he's been around NXT for 5 years. No, not really. There's a lot of American fans still haven't seen much of Pete Dunne. So let's be careful with that. Now, over in AEW, we get a tease, more than a tease. We get Jon Moxley and Pac going at it, and they're going to go at it next week. But we get some weird stuff. We get, in my opinion, a huge mistake with the street fight, because if you're going to have a street fight for the AEW championship, then for God's sake, I don't know how you have rope breaks. There's no rope breaks in a street fight. Now, the whole basis of the match was kind of booked around the fact that there had to be rope breaks, because that is why Chris Jericho finally says, okay, no matter where I get this Darby Allin guy, he gets to the ropes. So I'm going to make sure he can't reach the ropes. I'm going to duct tape his hands behind his back. That was the basis of the match. So when they sat down to figure this match out, they said the psychology behind this match is every time I get you in a submission, you get to the ropes. I finally have had enough of it. I go get some tape and I tape your hands behind your back. And nobody once said, well, wait a minute, it's a street fight. There shouldn't be a rope break. How is there a rope break in a street fight? Just a bad idea. That was a very basic mistake that should not have been made. Secondly, I think that AEW has to be very careful about using what I call the indie mentality. And the indie mentality is, let's just go for this match tonight because we don't know what we're going to do next week. And by that, I don't mean planning like they did with Jon Moxley and Pac. That's all fine. By that, I mean just blowing finishers, undermining finishers. And I think you had something good with Chris Jericho duct taping Allen's hands behind his back. But there should have been next to no offense from that point forward. Because while it's exciting and definitely athletic and very impressive to watch Darby Allin climb the ropes with no hands, fly outside the ring with his hands behind his back, which you try that sometime, by the way. Put your hands behind your back and see what your balance is. And put your hands behind your back and try to jump over something even. It's very difficult. I give him all the credit in the world for that, and being able to do that is amazing, and it was fun to watch. But what was the message that you sent? The message that you sent was Darby Allin actually did better with his hands behind his back than he was doing with his hands released against your champion. And I don't think that's the message you want to send. The message you want to send is Chris Jericho knew this was a street fight, knew he could not be disqualified for taping his hands behind his back, and this poor kid got sucked into this and then beat like a dog. Because that would have left a lot of heat for Jericho going into the Cody Rhodes match. Instead, the story you told was, even with his hands behind his back, Darby Allin was going to beat Chris Jericho if Jake Hager did not show up. That's not a good story to tell. And I caution you not to tell those type of stories, because I'm telling you it's going to hurt you in the long run. There's only so many finishers people can kick out of that you say, well, how could that little guy kick out of that monstrous finisher, before that finisher no longer has any value. So you got to be careful of that. And you also have to be careful about the stories you tell about these guys who are overcoming the odds. It's always nice when you have an underdog and they overcome the odds. I was not against Darby Allin getting a couple of kicks in, maybe a drop kick. But in the long run, that should have been the end of the story. The story should have been Jericho is such a coward that he taped Darby Allin's hands behind his back, and no human being can fight with their hands behind their back, especially an AEW champion, and he just mugged them, which was a pretty low-class move to do, but that's how low Jericho will stoop. That should have been the story. Not Jericho ties his hands behind his back, that lights a fire in Darby Allin that leads to Allin doing all these super athletic moves that Jericho has no defense for suddenly, and is about to lose his belt when Jake Hager, in Jim Ross's own words, saves his bacon. That was Jim Ross's own words. And Tony Schiavone agreed and said, you're most certainly right. So what was he most certainly right about? Darby Allin was going to be the champion with his hands tied behind his back? So how good is Chris Jericho? I caution AEW not to go for that feel-good moment, which is what it is when Darby Allin starts fighting back. The crowd pops and says, that's amazing and that's wonderful, and it is. But I caution you not to go for that moment when, in the long run, it undermines Chris Jericho. I couldn't beat this kid with his hands tied behind his back. That's the message you sent. So now Cody Rhodes with his hands not tied behind his back should have a field day on Chris Jericho, no? See, that's the problem. Also, when you're booking, please do not book street fights, no DQs or whatever, and then go for you have to break on the ropes. You have to get back in the ring by a 10 count. Then don't book those matches, because that makes you look silly. So that was my only real complaint this week, Mike, about the main event, is that I don't think it was well thought out.
Right. And furthermore, to add to your point about the hands behind your back deal, you watch any of these, you know, live PD or cops or whatever, you watch them arrest the people, they're having to help the people get into the car because having your hands behind your back affects your balance. You know, they're having to do that. And for Common Memorial, when you've been arrested, if you've ever been arrested, I've never been arrested, but I've watched these shows where they've had to do that. And that's, again, that's an unlogical thing to do. But other than that, I like the AEW show. I tell you what, and maybe we'll get to this at some point, but that women's match.
Yeah, it was a pretty good women's match that they had. Listen, I've actually, in a wrestling ring, had my hands handcuffed for a gimmick and thrown out of the ring. And it is extraordinarily hard to not just land on your face. It's extraordinarily hard. It's very hard if you land on your back, you could hurt your shoulder blades because your shoulder blades are in an odd position. Now, he was handcuffed very low down. It wasn't handcuffed. He was taped very low down. That's on purpose, you know, because the higher up you cuff someone, the more your shoulder blades protrude, and it's almost impossible to land on your back without hurting yourself. But still, it was very impressive what he did. I have no qualms about his athletic ability, and I was amazed at what he was able to do with his hands tied. I just don't think it sends a very good message. I just think it was probably a mistake. Would have been much better if Chris Jericho just fought off a couple of kicks. He made that little almost comeback with a couple of drop kicks and a kick or two. And then Jericho just beat his ass. And then if you want Jake Hager to come down and help beat his ass, fine. But to have it literally announced, if Jake Hager did not come down and smack Darby Allin in the head, Chris Jericho was finished, is probably not a good thing to say. That's probably not what you want to do. And it's also probably something you don't want to do to announce a street fight and then have rope breaks. What were you going to do if he didn't break? Disqualify him in a street fight? But he can tape your hands behind your back and not be disqualified? So now if the WWE did this, fans would be all over the WWE's logic and saying, oh, that's fucking stupid WWE. I don't even know how to do a street fight. So for people who think I'm picking on AEW, I'm not. I'm being fair. If WWE had done this, we would have been blowing our lid saying, how stupid can you be? So it's only fair that we ask AEW, what's the problem here? That's not a street fight. And you booked a street fight totally ass backwards. Not that it wasn't a good match. It's just that you booked a street fight totally ass backwards. Take responsibility for it. That's all. If it's illogical, it's illogical. And that's illogical. Now, Mike was alluding to the women's match with Rio against the Dr. But here's the deal. Was it a good match? Yeah, because it was filled with these. There was many times when I thought we were getting a new women's champion. But through this whole thing, Mike, as good as it was, the one thing I kept saying to myself over and over again is the WWE has a better women's division. In fact, Impact Wrestling has a better women's division. And these two girls are good workers, but they're not over like that.
Right, and that's the thing. Now, I do agree with you. This was a match, and I like Riho, but she reminds me of the fact that she reminds me a lot of Alexa Bliss and what you call it, because she's really small.
Yeah,
you know, she's small. Riho is small, whereas if you look at it on his face, she shouldn't have. Because Britt Baker is a bigger person, she shouldn't have beat her. You know, and look, had she been, and she got lucky because she was able to roll her up in her own, in the other ones as she was trying to put her finishing maneuver on
her. Yeah.
She out, and obviously they played it up as, well, Britt Baker has only been in the sport for a short time, whereas Riho has been in the sport for a while, you know, a veteran.
And
versus,
that's where logic came in. That's where logic came in. AEW sometimes does a really good job of logic, where they say, oh, well, you know, look, again, yeah, Britt Baker's been in a short time. She's going to kind of get snookered by a Riho, who's a veteran. That works. And that's why it's even more egregious when they make an obvious mistake, like, you know, rope breaks in a street fight. That's why I'm holding them to a higher standard, because they do think that out. Oftentimes these matches that AEW puts on does follow a logical pattern where you say, for instance, any of us who said John Moxley's teaming up with Pac is going to say, this is probably going to end ugly. Moxley's probably not the type of person to take Pac's, you know, crap, and Pac is going to be, you know, I'm the boss, and this is going to end ugly. Or it should. Based on their characters, this should end ugly. And it ended ugly. Which is exactly what fans figured would happen. So there's logic behind what AEW does. Usually far more than the WWE. Or even NXT. And that's why when they make this kind of an error of rope breaks in a street fight, I just shake my head and say, what the hell? It's a good match, Todd, but there's no rope breaks in a street fight.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dale, like you said about no rope breaks in street fight matches. I've never seen that in the past, and I don't want to see that now with rope breaks in street fight matches and hardcore matches. It's just plain old dumb right there. But the match itself was a pretty good match.
It was. Now, over in NXT, you know, listen, the Tommaso Ciampa returning is great. This is a guy who has a ton of natural charisma. The thing about Ciampa is this, which makes him a great professional wrestler. He always looks like he's truly in a fight. Always. He kind of doesn't have a lot of those moves that you say, well, that looks pretty, but it obviously doesn't hurt. Or, well, that looks good, but look how much cooperation it takes from your opponent to do that. You couldn't really do that in a fight. Most of what Ciampa does, you could probably do in a fight. Most of what Ciampa does looks like it hurts, and it looks logical. And that's why he's really good at what he does. Plus, he has a great presence, and he's good on the mic. He doesn't over-talk. He just says what he needs to say. I wasn't a big fan of him beating up the dude's jacket. Whatever. It was a pretty short match. But it's just introducing Ciampa back. Now, what I was a big fan of is having Undisputed Era come out and drop the USB stick. They did not attack Ciampa. They didn't do anything, you know, because, again, AEW is doing a lot of that. Everybody's getting attacked every 5 minutes. So the WWE in their NXT said, no, we're not here to attack you. We're here to show you something. And what they showed was basically a way to get Velveteen Dream off of TV for a little while because he's injured, and that is that he suffered a huge beatdown at their hands and that Ciampa could be next. This was a very good segment, very strong segment on NXT. Probably one of their stronger segments. Because NXT now, you can clearly see that NXT is moving in the direction of network television. Shorter matches, some shorter matches, a couple of, I wouldn't call them squash matches, but matches that you say, there's very little doubt of the outcome of this match. And then there are one or two feature matches. And this was a spot that I think fans can hang their hats on because they already know, they've already established Tommaso Ciampa as a complete psychopath when it comes to getting what he wants. Someone who will go to any lengths to get exactly what he wants, and he wants the belt. And Undisputed Era have that. And though it's 4-on-1, we already know what Ciampa can do and what he will do and what lengths he'll go to. And now he's been threatened. So that leaves that thread, Mike, of what happens now. Because, you know, as much as it's 4-against-1, fans are looking at it as, I don't think Undisputed Era understands who they're poking. And that's the beauty of an angle like that.
Right. And look, before he got hurt, when they were trying to put him together back together with Johnny Gargano, I think they were probably going to head in that direction where, you know, where he was going to go after the Undisputed Era, or as one of the guys in the Undisputed Era was going to get the championship and he or Gargano was going to go after him. But because, you know, there's a pack mentality, they're not going to be able to get the job done, and then they're going to have to bring some help with them. I think that's where they're going with this thing with Gargano. And we saw it again with – not with the Gargano, with Ciampa. And I think we saw it again with Roderick Strong, you know,
yep.
When he interfered in that match later to decide the championship, you know, who's going to fight him. You know,
right. And listen, Keith Lee and Dijak put on a very good match. It wasn't their best one, but it was a good one. And again, you know, Roderick Strong gets involved, and then obviously Regal comes out and says it's going to be a three-way. That should be a very, very interesting match. Very interesting. However, if you're going to tell me we're looking down the barrel of Keith Lee, Dijak, and Strong in a three-way dance, as opposed to John Moxley and Pac one-on-one, I still think John Moxley and Pac probably have stronger drawing power. Keith Lee just arrived here, and listen, there's no bigger Keith Lee fan than me. Myself and Todd have sat front row many a night and watched Keith Lee perform and said to everyone, including Keith Lee himself, it's only a matter of time. Very first time I saw Keith Lee in New Jersey during intermission, I went up to him and I told him, I asked for a picture and I said, I'm going to get this picture now because the first scout that sees you, you're gone. You're gone. Because people of that size usually don't have that sort of agility, that sort of stamina. And then if you want to add to that, he already has the charisma. He has the ability to use the mic. He stood out on that card to the point where I think it was obvious to even casual wrestling fans that he wasn't going to be wrestling in front of 100 people for very long. But he doesn't have drawing power right now. And I don't think Dijak does either. I don't even think Roderick Strong does. NXT fans are going to say this is a great match. Fans from outside of NXT are going to say, who? Whereas John Moxley and Pac, we already know that that's, you know, Neville and Dean Ambrose, and they have more name recognition. So I do think that there might be an issue with that next week. Now, as a wrestling fan, I'd rather see the three-way. But I think as a casual wrestling fan, more people are going to be interested in Moxley and Pac. That's just my opinion. So who won this week? Well, I got to tell you that I think for the third week in a row, AEW probably won. They had a pretty good women's match. They had that tag team match with Moxley and Pac that people were looking forward to. Darby Allin is fast rising, and you see why he's fast rising. If they did anything with the hands behind the back thing, is that they showcased him as a guy who the fans are going to really get behind and respect as an athlete. I think they set up the Cody Rhodes, Jericho thing well with some of the vignettes they did. The tag team tournament's in its early stages, so that's fine. I just think overall they had a more interesting show. Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest is going to be interesting to some people, but again, I think you're preaching to the choir. It's going to be interesting to NXT fans who are already going to tune into NXT. If your goal is to say we want people to tune into NXT that hasn't ever tuned into NXT before, and they don't know Pete Dunne and Damian Priest from the guys, you know, some guy who hands them their food at McDonald's, then you got to get a couple of names in there. Now, Finn Balor made a sort of a weird vignette speech. This is not his strong point. Just get him in the ring. Get him in the ring. So your NXT fan base, they're loving what you're doing. I'm loving what you're doing. But if you're asking me, is this going to draw fans that weren't NXT fans to NXT over AEW? I don't think so. I think more people would go to AEW because they say, oh, I know Chris Jericho. Oh, yeah, I know Jack Swagger. Oh, there's, you know, that's Neville. And, oh, that's Dean Ambrose. And, you know, there are people there they know. And you're putting main events on in NXT with people that, unless you watch NXT, you probably don't know them. Balor is a good beginning, but I think you have to put some other people there. So I'm going to say that I'm going to give NXT a B-. It was a really good show, but I think that there were some short matches and some matches that were more like setups. I'm going to give AEW a B. I think that they made a huge mistake with the street fight. But aside from that, I think pretty much everything was really, really good. Yes, and I've been asked, are we going to talk about the Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross situation? Yeah, we will in a minute. But let's get the ratings first. Mike, what do you think?
I got to go with you. AEW, a B, and NXT, a B-. And look, I think I've watched Scorpio Sky and SCU for a while now. I think they've got a star in Scorpio Sky. They might have to take him away from SCU. But again, I don't know if they're going to do that. But I think they got a star in Scorpio Sky.
He's definitely good in the ring. He's definitely good on the mic. I'm not the biggest fan of the Danielson Kazarian. I always liked, but I'm not a big fan of the act right now. So, yeah, I think he's the standout in that. Todd, what's your ratings?
I got to go the same grade with you as well.
Okay, so we got a B and a B-. Now, the Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross situation, let me get to this because fans have been in an uproar about it. Yes, SmackDown was so stupid, or Fox was so stupid, that they picked Alexa Bliss separately from Nikki Cross, when they could have had them both in one pick. That was dumb as dirt. Now let's double down on dumb as dirt and trade them directly back to Raw for considerations of picks later. What in the blue hell is going on? Could you have thought this out just a little bit? WWE, could you have thought this out just a little bit? This is supposed to be one of your big things. And you didn't think it out at all. Not at all. It's a shame. I mean, we had a caller that unfortunately I did not get to because I did not see it until just now. If you call back, I'll get you on the air. Look, the bottom line of the situation is this. This was a very, very, very poorly thought out draft. Very poorly thought out. First off, the rules were weird. The half night and the other one and the other night, that was weird. And then saying if the people weren't picked on Friday night, they were free agents, only to be listed on Raw as not free agents. I don't know what that was all about. I don't know what was with picking Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross separately and then trading them as one. I don't know what that's all about. Yes, as people mentioned, when they first did the SmackDown lists of who was eligible, they did them in the exact order they were going to be picked. I don't know if anybody saw that, but whoever put the list up of eligible people to be picked on SmackDown tonight put them up in the exact order they were picked. Exact order. It's inexcusable. It shows you're not trying. See, this is what AEW will eventually defeat the WWE over if they defeat them over anything. It's not talent in any way, shape, or form. Did WWE not have Chris Jericho? Did they not have Jake Hager? Did they not have Dean Ambrose? Did they not have Neville? Not all those people. It's not the talent. It's the perception that you're not even trying. AEW comes off as a group of people who are making mistakes but trying really, really, really hard. WWE is coming off as a federation that isn't trying at all and doesn't care when they make a mistake. That's the difference. So fans are seeing one as lazy and one as eager but still green. Well, eager but still green can be forgiven. Lazy and complacent cannot be, and that's the problem. When WWE makes a mistake like putting up the draft in the exact order they're going to be drafted, that's lazy. When AEW makes a mistake of saying we didn't really think out the rules in the street fight, that's green. But they still try real hard. WWE doesn't even address it. They're just like, whatever. Who cares? That's a big problem for the WWE, because the perception among wrestling fans that I talk to is that the mistakes WWE make, they make because they're lazy and uncaring. And the mistakes AEW makes is because they're eager and green and still feeling, you're getting their feet wet in the business. That ultimately could be what hurts WWE more than anything, Mike.
Right. There's a phrase that comes to mind, and it's called perception is reality.
Yep.
You know, and the thing is you look at it, that it's just what you said. The perception is that they're lazy. Now the perception is turning out to be almost a reality. Just like when our president says fake news about CNN, that's basically become a reality. It was a perception. Now it's become a reality. Well, that's the WWE right now. They don't care. They're lazy.
They will not address it. That's the problem. They will not address it. It's almost like, well, you're just dumb wrestling fans. How dare you catch our mistake? Whereas AEW will probably address it in some way. It would not surprise me in any way, shape, or form if Darby Allin or someone comes up with something to address, well, it wasn't really a street fight, because this happened or this happened. I could have done this. The rules were unclear, because then at least it'll make sense. And they'll say, well, that's the way we can kind of show fans we know we screwed up and we'll address it. If AEW addresses their mistakes and corrects them, that's all you can ask. People are going to make mistakes. But if you have such a big ego that you say, I'm not addressing my mistakes, how dare you even catch my mistakes, you're just lowly wrestling fans, just live with it. Well, these are big mistakes. Why would you want Fox to look like morons? And that's exactly what they look like when they took Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross separately. They look like morons. And then you double down, and rather than to say, Fox has a pick coming. We inadvertently listed them separately when we should have listed them as a tag team. So Fox has a pick coming. Or you could have went back on it and said, Fox has reneged that, saying that should have been one pick, and they're correct. So Fox gets a pick, and then Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross goes to Raw. That would have worked. Instead, you just said, no, we're going to double down. Not only does Fox look like idiots for picking them separately when they should have picked them as a team, but now they're going to release them both the 2 days after they picked them back to Raw and not get anything in return. Just considerations for a future pick down the road. What? So you wasted two picks. You shipped them back off as one pick. And you don't even get that pick till later on. So how dumb do you look? It made Fox look like complete and utter morons. And because you wouldn't address your mistake and you doubled down instead, now they look like double morons, Mike. They look like they have no idea what they're doing.
Right. They look like double morons. And that's, I mean, again, you mentioned it earlier, Vince. The problem with Vince McMahon is he's a micromanager. And he's probably going to micromanage the XFL back into the ground, you know. But that's neither here nor there. Right now, he's micromanaging. Maybe it was a mistake to hire Bischoff, but you hired Bischoff to do a job and you didn't let him do his job. You began to micromanage him. You hired Paul Heyman to do a job and you're micromanaging him, you know. So if you're going to hire people to do a job, and let them do their job. Don't
let them
micromanage
do the job.
Them.
I agree. Last thing we want to address is Maria Kanellis, who once again is making news by tweeting, I support my husband's decision. Family comes first. I want to set the record straight. A, my husband was never in rehab. Not true. B, the WWE never paid for it. I don't know whether that's true or not. And I have not requested my release. No. And here's why you haven't requested your release. Because you're pregnant and you can do absolutely nothing. So why would you request your release so you're not going to get paid? Because if they release you, they don't have to pay you. They can release you and tell you go wherever you want. From this point forward, you're the one who asked for the release. You voided your contract. So of course you're going to take the free money. Of course you're going to say, no, I'll stick around until the baby comes out, and then I'll ask for my release. I'll steal your money for the next, 6 months, 5 months, whatever it is. I've had it with Maria Kanellis. She's a moron. All she wants to do is take pot shots at fans who call her on her bullshit. And then she says, if you don't like it, then just unfollow me. I'm tired. Yeah, we're tired of you. We're tired of you getting paid and doing nothing. We're tired of you. And, well, both times I got pregnant, I didn't know. Oh, but please, I don't want to hear your excuses. You take money from a company. You know goddamn well that if you get pregnant, you're not going to be able to perform, and you get pregnant. How about if Charlotte got pregnant? How about if Becky got pregnant? How about if Sasha Banks got pregnant? How about if Bayley got pregnant? But guess what? They didn't. You did. That's your decision, and it's your fault. And the WWE didn't fire you. The WWE didn't say, well, you got pregnant accidentally, and so I'm sorry, you're gone. No, they didn't do that. Both neither time. They paid you. They kept you. They asked you to do things here and there that you could do. And all we heard from you is, we're not happy. We're not happy. We're not being used enough. Well, how about you don't get pregnant? So you can be used. Then when they try to work your pregnancy into an angle so they can use you, your husband quits. What more do you want of them? Oh, I forgot. You want the life of your contract while you sit on your ass at catering and do absolutely nothing but take their money. And then get on Twitter and bitch at fans. Mike Canales has talent. Maria Canales has none. Zero, zilch. None. And she obviously doesn't understand or respect the business. And she obviously doesn't get the fact that a lot of this crap is her fault. Well, what am I supposed to do? I got pregnant. Gee, I don't know. Be responsible and don't get pregnant when you're under a contract. How about that? But again, the WWE didn't release you. If the WWE released you, maybe I'd be on your side and say, well, you know, come on, what are you going to do? She got pregnant. No, they didn't do that. They didn't do it the first time. They weren't about to do it the second time. All they did ask you to do is show up and do an angle while you still could before you got too far along in your pregnancy. And when you found out you were going to be used, which you were bitching about, we're not used, we're not used, we're not used. You found out you're going to be used. It's, we got to work. I think I'll quit. I'll quit, but you stay. That way you're still getting that good old WWE money for doing nothing, and I can go live my dream and wrestle elsewhere. So please, don't give me none of that nonsense. I have no sympathy, and I have no tolerance for Maria Canales getting on Twitter and at fans about it, Mike.
Right. I have more sympathy for Lana. Even though they're trying to make her a heel, I have more sympathy for Lana than I do for Maria Canales, because at least with Lana, we know how talented she is. Yeah, she's green and within her in the ring stuff, but she's a good enough athlete that maybe if they did something with that, that we could get past her being green. But we know how good she is on the mic, and we know how good her charisma is. So there's a difference, and you're right. She's not talented here. She wasn't talented when she was in Impact. So do whatever you want with her, you know?
Yeah, and isn't it miraculous that, I'm not asking for my release. Of course you're not. Because you know that without Mike there, the storyline is over. All you're going to have to do is sit your ass down at catering and eat or stay at home and collect your paycheck. So, of course, I wouldn't ask for my release either if for the next 8 months or 7 months they had to pay me for doing absolutely nothing but kicking up and watching TV. Of course I wouldn't ask for my release. What a joke. What a joke. Really pissed me off. Anyway, Todd, listen, good riddance. The whole thing was dumb anyway.
Absolutely right there. Like you said, it was just dumb and stupid, and the whole Maria and Mike Bennett angle with the Maria being pregnant angle and having Mike Canales not being the father. It was just dumb and stupid, and it was
going nowhere anyway. And here's a newsflash. Mike Bennett is a good wrestler, but Mike Bennett is also a guy who is a very good wrestler and thinks he's better than 99.9% of everybody else, and that's not true. That's just not true. There are just as good of people who are sitting on the bench right alongside Mike Bennett. Anyway, folks, we will be back here, obviously, on Sunday with more WrestleChat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.